Chapter 13. Black Earth. It seems to me to be no longer in doubt that civilizations with true cities and mature polities did flourish in the Amazon before the European conquest. Less clear is how far back the story of these civilizations can be traced in this immense region where so little archaeology has been done. Thanks to Anna Roosevelt's work, we know, at the very least, that humans were present at Pedra Pintada, at the Tapajos-Amazon confluence, by about 14,000 years ago, and possibly significantly earlier, with other more accessible painted rock shelters in Brazil dating back as much as 50,000 years, it is, I suspect, only a matter of time before evidence of at least equally great, if not greater, antiquity emerges from the Amazon itself. But greater antiquity of what? Was it foragers and hunter-gatherers all the way back? Or was some advanced but unseen presence, capable of spanning the globe, at work behind the scenes of prehistory that might help to explain how Australasian genes reached the Amazon during the Ice Age? Again, the problem is complicated by the fact that few archaeologists other than Roosevelt have looked for evidence of humans in the Amazon at all at such a remote period. So we have very little to go on across thousands of years, during which the data are sketchy and inconclusive. But then, out of that opaque interlude in the life of the prehistoric Amazon, quite suddenly and unexpectedly, the lineaments of a great mystery begin to materialize. It concerns the exemplary agronomy that UCLA's Professor David Wilkinson cites as his two-word explanation for how the cities of the rainforest were able to feed their large populations, because rainforests, in general, do not have good base soils, but sustain their fertility in the mulch of plants and leaves above ground. This is why, when areas of the Amazon are cleared for agriculture today, for example to make way for soybean plantations, they become exhausted, infertile, and useless after only a few years. But Wilkinson is not speaking of the base soils. His exemplary agronomy, as we shall hear, refers to an artificial, man-made soil that first suddenly and inexplicably appeared in the Amazon many thousands of years ago, but that has such miraculous powers of self-regeneration that it is still in use for agriculture and still incredibly productive today. It is called terra preta. More than any other single factor, it is now understood by scholars to have been responsible for the astonishing and utterly anomalous agricultural productivity that allowed a population estimated at between 8 and 20 million people to thrive for untold epochs in the Amazon before being overtaken by the cataclysm of the European conquest. Terra preta feels like the work of scientists. But if there was a civilization in the Amazon, then why should we be surprised to find scientific achievements to its credit? The mystery. The existence of Terra Preta was first reported by Europeans in colonial period Brazil, who called it Terra Preta de Indio, Indian Black Earth. The reference to Indians reflecting the presence of abundant pottery shards of evident pre-Columbian age on the surface of most known exemplars. Today, these special soils, described by one 19th century explorer as consisting of a fine, dark loam, a foot and often 2 feet thick, are more often spoken of as black earth, Amazonian anthropogenic dark earths, or simply as Amazonian dark earths, ADEs for short. Whatever we call them, though, what are they, and why do they matter? We've seen how, across immense areas, the natural terra firme, non-floodplain soils of the Amazon, are too poor to sustain intensive agriculture and thus to feed the large-scale populations that we now know inhabited the region in pre-Columbian times. With few available nutrients and having extremely high aluminium concentrations, one could not imagine a worse regime for productive agriculture. Indeed, the consensus of scholars is that even the floodplains, with their better soils, are high-risk areas for crop production because of the unpredictability of the flood regime. But, and it's a big but, What are we to make of those early explorers' reports of dense settlements extending for kilometers along river bluff edges whence roadways branched out into the interior? The remnants of some of these settlements are now being investigated by 21st century researchers, no longer blinded by the prejudices of the past, who often refer to them as garden cities of the Amazon. Invariably, it turns out that they are associated, as one authoritative study puts it, with large acreages of Indian black earth, or terra preta. The heightened fertility status of these soils, generically termed dark earths, has long been recognized by the indigenous inhabitants of the region, as well as by current colonists. Across the rainforest, there are many thousands of expanses of terra preta, on a similar range of scales, covering a total area that is, in all honesty, unknown, but that various authorities have guesstimated at 6,000 square kilometers, 18,000 square kilometers, 154,063 square kilometers, and an area the size of France, in other words, around 640,000 square kilometers. Whatever the true figure, these widely scattered plots of ADE, the rediscovered remnants of a once much more extensive system, are indeed actively sought out and productively cultivated by indigenous people to this day. In the southeastern Amazon, along the Xingu River, to give just one example, a recent study found that existing settlements, though on a much smaller scale than in the past, are still able to survive largely because of the accomplishments of their ancestors, who had continuously occupied, managed, and modified the soils over thousands of years. Almost without exception, the riverine people of the Xingu today inhabit and plant in dark earths and make use of resources such as Brazil nuts, babassu palm, dark earths, and vine forests that are indicators or products of this earlier occupation. Indeed, as Stephen Schwartzman, the research team leader, maintains, contemporary land use and resource management in the Xingu Corridor is significantly conditioned or made possible by mostly little-studied prehistoric land use practices. Particularly little-studied and poorly understood are the practices that resulted in the so far unexplained inception in the Amazon a very long time ago of the incredibly fertile ADEs themselves. Nobody doubts that they are anthropogenic, man-made in some way, and everyone agrees that they're an amazing success story. So fecund is terra preta, even after thousands of years of use, that it can still regenerate barren soils it is added to and has been described as miracle earth. The important questions, therefore, are how was terra preta made? Why was it made? When was it made? And who made it? Part of the answer to the first question is often dug up by villagers along the Xingu River. In and characteristic of the patches of ancient terra preta where they plant their crops, they regularly encounter potsherds, stone axes, ceramics, and figurines. Such refuse left behind by people of the remote past seems to play an important role in the amazing fertility of the ADEs, but then so do all the other strangely jumbled and juxtaposed ingredients that typically also include compost, the feces and urine of humans and animals, and all sorts of organic kitchen waste, including bones, notably fish bones. Most researchers believe that terra preta soils formed as composted material accumulated via incidental human activity, often in debris piles referred to as middens. University of Sao Paulo archaeologist Eduardo Neves reportedly favors a scenario in which successive generations could have swept food refuse, especially fish and animal bones, from their dwellings and then added human and animal excrement. Elsewhere, in a paper published in the Journal of Archaeological Science in February 2014, Neves, Michael Heckenberger, and others developed this idea further. Their argument depicts the ancient Amazonians as living amid a shitscape, euphemistically referred to as a middenscape, dumping their excretions, rubbish, broken crockery, and fish bones into the middens, and most importantly, burning wet vegetation on top of the middens, and always conscientiously making sure, without any long-term planning or purpose in mind, to keep the fires damped down under a blanket of dirt and straw. This method of cool burning, explains Tom Miles, an expert in the combustion and gasification of biomass, is known as slash and char, to distinguish it from the widely condemned slash and burn. In slash and burn, dry brush and grass are burned in open fires, spewing vast quantities of carbon dioxide into the atmosphere, and leaving only small amounts of nutrients in the ash that's then dug into the ground. By contrast, slash and char involves burning wet vegetation, so it smolders underneath a layer of dirt and straw. Robbed of oxygen, the fire only partly burns any wood or stalks, leaving most as tiny chunks of charcoal. This biochar is turned into the soil. In due course, entirely incidentally and accidentally, according to most proponents of such views, these stinking, smoldering middens spread and alchemically transform themselves into ADE, the world's most fertile soil, without any deliberate human intervention at all. I'd say it's an unlikely story. I can't prove it, but my bet is that Terra Preta is not an accidental byproduct of shit, fish bones, broken pots, figurines, stone axe heads, and low-temperature fires. Just because it contains all these things doesn't inevitably make it fortuitous. I think the evidence supports another possibility, that this remarkable soil was invented, making excellent use of freely available local resources as an ingenious, low-tech, and environmentally friendly way to increase agricultural yield in areas that would otherwise not have been able to sustain agriculture, and thus large populations, even for a few decades, let alone for several thousands of years, as the Amazonian dark earths have consistently demonstrated a miraculous ability to do. What has been mysterious about these soils, Professor Antoinette Winkler-Prinz, Director for Environmental Studies at Johns Hopkins University, admits, is their ability to persist in a landscape that common ecological knowledge would dictate they could not. Why, then, have ADEs dated to have formed up to 2,500 years ago continued to exist? It is not just a matter of 2,500 years ago. As we shall hear, the origin of the Amazonian dark earths goes back much further than that. But here's how Dr. Winkler-Prinz answers her own question. The unique nature of the carbon in these soils is the key to the stability of the organic matter in ADEs and the key to the mystery of the persistence of ADEs in this landscape. There appears, exceptionally, to be universal agreement among scientists on one point. This is that the explanation for all the useful qualities of Terra Preta lies in large part with the char, or biochar, that gives the soil its darkness and that is produced, as Tom Miles explained, by the smoldering, rather than hot burning, of organic matter in an oxygen-poor environment. The results are not properly understood, but according to nature, the particles of char produced this way are somehow able to gather up nutrients and water that might otherwise be washed down below the reach of roots. William Bale, professor of anthropology at Tulane University, confirms these observations, adding that microbial activity leads to increased carbon sequestration, and that ADE is richer and more diverse in microbes than surrounding soils, even though millions of these species remain to be identified precisely, and literally a million separate taxa can be contained in only 10 grams of soil. A significant proportion of the microbes in ADE are different from microbes in the surrounding primeval soils. Another authoritative study also focused on the surprising microbial vigor and utility for agricultural purposes of ADEs, noting a further connection with the managed use of fire. Fire contributes charcoal and ash, which increase soil pH, thereby suppressing aluminium activity toxic to plant roots and soil microbiota. What is more, fire increases the capacity of the soils to retain nutrients, thus maintaining a synergistic cycle of continued fertility. In summary, concedes Professor Winkler-Prinz, the microbial complexes associated with ADEs are poorly understood, and quite mysterious, actually. Likewise, even the authors of the shitscape-middenscape theory of ADE formation admit that despite the importance of research on Terra Preta, we still lack a firm understanding of the specific formation processes that led to the diversity inherent in these anthrosols. Yet all this mystery, all this effectiveness, all this efficiency, and all these remarkable contributions to welfare, we are asked to believe, came about as incidental byproducts of human activity. They just happened, without any planning or deliberation or design at all. I could see immediately why such ideas would give comfort to archaeologists whose rollercoaster ride thus far has taken them from a position where they had convinced themselves and their students that there could never have been any cities in the Amazon, to a position where they must now accept that the prehistoric rainforest once teemed with cities. This in itself has been a traumatic enough paradigm shift. I'm therefore not surprised that most archaeologists remain unwilling to go the extra mile needed to view Terra Preta, that miraculous agent of fertility, as the product of deliberate, ingenious, organized, focused, scientific activity. It causes far less cognitive dissonance for so naturally conservative and cautious a discipline to conclude instead that it was the waste and refuse of those previously contested Amazonian cities with their very large populations that had accidentally fertilized the land and made possible the otherwise anomalous boost to agricultural productivity that had kept the stomachs of the otherwise anomalous urban populations full. But isn't it much more likely that all this happened the other way round? Surely it makes no sense that the large populations came first. If they did, how did they feed themselves while enough shit and fish bones were being accumulated to create the first patches of Terra Preta? Isn't it more logical that the settlement and expansion of human populations in the Amazon was a planned affair, in which the spread of Terra Preta was a precondition for the development of large settlements, rather than a consequence of it? Professor Bale, not an archaeologist, seems to be thinking somewhat along these lines when he cites the bizarre microbial differences between ADEs and the original unenhanced soils that surround them as evidence for a deliberate human contribution to microbial diversity in the Amazon, a remarkably intriguing and still living, even evolving legacy of the pre-Columbian Dark Earth people. Remarkable and precocious science. As with so much else that concerns the Amazon, the issue of when exactly Terra Preta first began to be created continues to be fogged by confusion and uncertainty. A casual glance through the scientific literature might leave the reader with the impression that these exceptionally fertile anthropogenic soils are a phenomenon of the past 3,000 years only, with the great bulk of Terra Preta creation taking place between about 1,000 years ago and the time of the European conquest. Look closer, however, and you will discover that many of the same authorities are tiptoeing around the edges of another mystery here. For example, while re-emphasizing their satisfaction with the idea that Amazonian dark earths are produced by human habitation but unintentionally, and noting that ADE formation ceased in most, if not all, parts of Amazonia during the early contact period, Eduardo Neves and his colleagues concede that the initiation of ADE formation has been more difficult to explain so far. They choose to focus on the period from around 2,500 to 2,000 years ago, but caution that earlier sites may have disappeared due to the dynamic landscape processes of the Amazon, or perhaps because the soil organic matter in most older ADE sites has been mineralized, leaving only inorganic artifacts behind, without coloration of the substrate by organic matter, and thus early sites are underrepresented. But by no means all of the earlier sites have disappeared. Enough of the older plots remain for several of the leading authorities to agree that 2,500 years ago is nowhere near the beginning of the story. Neves himself accepts the existence of much older ADE sites, notably the sites of the so-called Masangana phase, dated to around 4,800 years before the present. These sites, which are about 300 years older than the orthodox date for the construction of the Great Pyramid of Giza, are located in southeast Amazonia, in the Jamari River area. Unfortunately, they're no longer accessible, having been flooded by the construction of the Samuel hydroelectric dam. It seems, however, that there are even older ADEs. In the Proceedings of the Royal Society, for example, Nevis and others report black earths that are between 5,000 and 6,000 years old. Elsewhere, in no less august a journal than Nature, we read of ADEs that are thought to be 7,000 years old. Nor does the trail leading back to humanity's time of amnesia quite fade from view even there. Specialists from Cornell University's Department of Crop and Soil Sciences, joined by Eduardo Nevis and citing his unpublished data, conclude in the Journal of the Soil Science Society of America that the man-made dark earths of the Amazon in fact date back as far as 8,700 years ago. And again, Nevis's own caution must surely apply, that even older sites than this may very well once have existed but have disappeared with the passage of time. Given the incredible longevity of this soil and its extraordinary ability to regenerate its own fertility through microbial action, it is by no means beyond the bounds of reason to suppose that plots of terra preta, dating back to the last ice age, might still exist somewhere in the millions of square kilometers of the rainforest that have never been investigated by archaeologists at all. What is certain, however, is that a remarkable and precocious skill and competence in soil science, exemplary agronomy in Professor David Wilkinson's phrase, leaves its fingerprints in the Amazon at least 8,700 years ago. After that, and for how long before that we do not know, its use becomes integrated into the harmonious and successful lifeways of ancient Amazonian civilization. This civilization thrives for millennia, long outlasting ancient Egypt and ancient Mesopotamia, doing very well for itself and for its people in just about every possible way until the catastrophe of European contact that not only subjects it to genocide by sword and by epidemic, but also conspires to deny its very existence for centuries thereafter. Listener, please note, when I speak of an ancient Amazonian civilization, I am not, under any circumstances, claiming that this was the lost civilization I have spent much of my working life trying to track down. My suggestion, rather, is that in weighing what happened in the Amazon from the Ice Age until the European conquest, we may find that certain striking anomalies, such as the mysterious Australasian genetic signal, and indeed the Amazonian dark earths themselves, bear the fingerprints of that world-exploring, world-encompassing, world-measuring, lost civilization of prehistoric antiquity. More specifically, the proposition we are presently considering in this context is that the settlement and expansion of human populations in the Amazon was a planned affair, in which the spread of terra preta was a precondition for the development of large population centers rather than a consequence of it. It was, in other words, not something random at all, but an integral part of a carefully thought-out project.